702 Night Talk.
Call Gugs Mushlongu
on 011-883-0702.
29 minutes before 9 o'clock, you are still on Night Talk, the Friday edition on 702 and Cape Talk. Now, this week, you may have seen news reports about a global economic crime and fraud survey released by PricewaterhouseCoopers. It was actually released on, was it Tuesday? Which looked at the rate of economic crime, also called white-collar crime, and South Africa ranking quite high, which I thought was interesting, considering how robust our laws are, our financial regulation systems. But we seem to do quite badly in this survey. So to speak about the survey and what it means, especially if you have money, as mentioned earlier, joined with studio by Mduduzi Lutulimdu. Good evening.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Good to have you. Okay, yeah. So this survey, what does it actually tell us?
So, yeah, you know, I saw the survey and the first thought that went through my head is our sports teams might be struggling, but at least we're number one at something.
We're winning at something.
Unfortunately, it's the wrong thing.
It is, along with our levels of literacy in primary school kids. You the know, wrong thing the you wrong want to be thing. Winning at.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's... we've seen the trend for a couple of years now. It's just that now we've topped the list. But if you go back even as far as 2011, we were way above the global average for this sort of crime. And as much as we'll never really have a specific number for the damage that is done to the economy, and the best we can do is guess because criminals don't have a habit of leaving a ledger around of I'm stealing this money, at least the good ones. Mm. You can see it. You can see it in the way our economy is at the moment. Mm. Part of the stagnation is not just lack of growth, but it is mismanagement to expenditure. So if we look at the public sector, probably the most common white-collar crime there, which has been an issue for quite a while, has been the falsifying of qualifications.
Okay.
You know, that is a white collar crime.
Yeah.
And no one can really put a number to the damage that is done in terms of putting people who are not properly qualified in very senior positions. Not even if you discard the senior positions, just having a person who is not properly qualified in a position, and the damage that does to the public sector.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at SARS as an example. I know there's an ongoing inquiry there, but one of the big problems at SARS has been maladministration or rather a lack of proper administration that has led to us not being properly able to collect the relevant amount of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the issue that's facing SARS now. And part of that is a combination of, like I say, maladministration, not doing things the right way. The policy is there, but you're not following the policy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of that is, again, not having the right people in very key positions. There's examples in state-owned entities, which is a huge problem for ours. Part of the huge budget deficit is the amount of waste that has gone on at state-owned entities.
Mm-hmm.
SAA, for a very long time, we have been asking the question, seriously, what is going on there?
Hmm.
And we still don't know, because it's either, you know, you don't even have to be a financial expert to think about it. It's either for the last decade or longer, we as a country are unable to put a competent team there who knows how to run an airline, or something is seriously wrong that they consistently have to be bailed out.
Hmm.
If you look at Eskom for the last 5 years has been very consistent in terms of the power they generate, essentially the end products that they take to the market. Prices have been consistently going up, meaning their revenue has been going up.
Mm.
But surprisingly, their debt has been going up even more than that. And then you ask, but what's going on here?
They currently don't have the working capital they need to function and are literally going from month to month credit.
Do you know what I mean? These things are there staring out at the face. We hear about it every day in the news.
Mm.
So we can't be surprised when this survey comes out that, oh, and let's not pick on the public sector. The private sector, a very easy example that's still very top of mind, is Steinhoff.
Mm-hmm.
Now we hear the emails that have recently come out from the German journalists who are also investigating the European business standoff that started the share price collapse. Mm. And from those emails, Marcus Huster talking to some of the partners there, and it essentially looks like as far back as 2011, this maladministration, if you can call that, but from the emails, it plainly looks like it's fraud.
Mm.
You know,
it's looking like more and more like this company was a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? So these things are happening. We are actually aware of them, but because they're not I don't want to say violent, but they're not in your face crimes like hijacking or house breakings or robbery where it brings chills down your spine. You sort of hear it and you're like, huh, and you move on. But these stories have been there consistently for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the trend has been there. And it's no surprise that, well, now we've topped the list for something not that great.
So, okay. So on one hand, obviously, it's about the damage to the country's reputation.
Mm.
But I mean, what else does a rating like this mean for us? So, you know, when PwC does this ranking, our rate is 77%. The global rate is 49%. How do we make sense of that? Because someone could say, I get it. We're kind of at the top of this survey for economic crime, above almost double the global average. But I mean, practically for me as a consumer, what does it mean?
Mm. Well, simply put, what something like this does, a survey like this, it reduces business confidence. And we know the budget just happened now. We know that we have a huge budget deficit. That's why VAT was increased to try and address that. And like I say, we need to find a way for our economy to grow.
Hmm.
And one of the major pillars of that, or one of the major parts of the plan to get our economy to grow, is to entice foreign direct investments, is to entice global markets to say, listen, do come into South Africa. We've got a great story to tell. And you can invest here and grow your business, but surveys like this make selling that story so much harder.
Yeah.
And it's understanding that the psychology behind it, because some of the people that are committing this sort of crime, and it's everyday people, it's not as if it's a special syndicate, it's everyday people in everyday jobs and everyday corporates committing white-collar crime.
Mm.
The one part is people feeling like victims. We know that your income is definitely not keeping up with inflation and the state of things. And people are in a position, they're doing the work, they feel like every year it seems like I'm doing more, I'm doing two people's job, but getting less out of it. So they justify the crime. You know, they say,
okay,
actually, I deserve this.
Yeah.
I deserve this. Why am I not being promoted? Why did I not get the bonus? Because I really have been working hard.
Mm.
The other part of the equation, and it was also touched in the survey, is that the reason why white-collar crime persists and continues to grow is the perception that actually, if I do it, I probably won't be caught. And that is a lack of faith in the police, the national
regulation system.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you touched on when we first began saying, how can this be? I mean, we have such great policies, we have such great legislation. Yeah. As always, South Africa's problem has never been legislation or policy.
It's enforcement.
It's enforcement and implementation. So just like any criminal, you know, we ask, how do we cut down any crime, murder, hijacking? If criminals feel that if I do this, chances are I will get away with it, then they'll do it. It doesn't matter, you can have the best laws, but if there's no follow through, and that's what's happening here, is that people are doing it. People are committing billion rand fraud, you know, and that's what's happening. It's sign off, but who's going to go to jail?
So there are no consequences.
There's no consequence. Who's going to go to jail? We ask that. We see it at the state-owned entities. We've seen it for years.
Mm.
We have commission after commission. We throw money at that. We investigate. We have a report that says, something wrong was done there. And then...
But so, we can't say it's done by who.
Even if we get to the point where we say it was done by that person, it's short-term history tells us that who actually pays for those crimes. Has prosecution happened? We know that there's serious issues with the National Prosecuting Authority, with our police. And yes, you know, we got to. It's a new dawn. We got to be positive. We're trying to fix the wrongs of the past. But that's why things like this persist, and that's why it's gotten to such a horrible point.
Mm.
Is purely that people feel, I will get away with it. Actually,
interestingly enough, though, the global rate isn't all that low. It's 49%.
Mm.
I mean, and that means the issue of white collar crime is quite a serious thing. I mean, they survey, it's 123 countries,
mm.
so quite a decent survey. And I mean, if that's the global rate, I mean, that's pretty high. That globally, if you kind of take all the surveyed countries, it works out to 49%. I mean, we're on the other end, the higher end of 77, but is anyone getting it right? Is anyone just, you know, managing to, you know, get it in hand?
Yeah. I think this is one of those problems, much like most crime, you'll never probably eradicate it. It's just a matter of trying to make sure that it doesn't get so out of hand that it starts having an irreversible impact. You know, a few years ago, we heard about the Panama Papers and things like that. We know there are tax havens. We know that the reason why there's the FACE Act, FICA Act, is because money laundering is happening.
Mm.
Those laws are trying to address that. But can you ever get it to a point where it's zero? I don't know, because essentially it comes down to, it's a moral question.
Mm.
End of the day, it's, you can have the best laws, you can even have proper enforcement, but as long as there's someone out there who feels that it is worth their while doing this, the reward justifies the risk, it'll carry on happening.
So, I mean, if you say our rating or our ranking in the survey has been getting worse, how do we turn the tide? How do we fix this? How do we go from number one to number two next year to eventually, you know, out of the top 10 within the next year? Because it's obviously the kind of thing you want to, and this is just one measure, but it's obviously the kind of thing you just want to get right.
Mm. Look, it's got to come from prosecution. That's really the only way.
Mm.
With any crime, there's got to be a clear message that if you do this, we will find you, we will catch you.
Yeah.
And it's that simple. Because like we said earlier, the problem is not that the legislation isn't there. Those bodies in our country that have been set up to deal with these specific crimes, exactly, we know the issues that they've had for the last decade or so. So we at a point now where, unfortunately, only the action will speak louder than words, if we can put it that way, because it has to be enforcement.
What do we do about, I mean, you touched on it earlier, the culture, right, of, well, Do's doing it, Gogs is doing it, Comfort's doing it, so I'm going to do it. And you know what? Actually, I'm not even making all that, you know, my money's not that good and life is expensive. So, you know, this culture of everyone almost being out for themselves.
Mm.
And obviously then it manifests at different levels. So obviously when we think about economic crime, white collar crime, we think of SOEs.
Mm.
We think of the work the Competition Commission does with private entities, private companies working in cartels and being anti-competitive. But it's also, you know, because it's about economic crime, even at a, you know, you stealing the school feeding scheme's money is white collar crime. And you know, you bribing a police officer is, so I mean, there's also almost this bigger context of, so even if we enforce, how do you then deal with this now culture that's seeped into everything, not just business, not just private sector, public sector, but, you know, day to day life. Like people will tell you, oh, well, you know, I paid this thing because, oh, well, it's so expensive. And you're like, why did you do that?
Look, I mean, it's a morality question, isn't it? And unfortunately, I'm not a pastor. So
you're not a philosopher.
I'm not a philosopher, but it comes down to that. I mean, you touched about the cartels that have been colluding, whether from bread or the construction sector, or
edible
recently
oils, media's found itself in trouble.
Do you know what I mean? So it's almost become part of our identity to be captured, if I can put it that way.
You know it's going to happen, you know, or it's happening.
And that's the problem, in that it's become part of our identity, part of our consciousness, that you question yourself, that if I did find myself in a room and I was being bribed, I would like to think that I would say, no, this is really wrong. What's happening here?
Why would you even think bribing me?
What would you even think of bribing? What about me makes you think that I'm open to that?
Yeah.
But balancing that with the understanding that, you know, people are indebted, people are suffering, and really that's no excuse for anything.
And people are greedy.
And people are
greedy. I mean, you look at Steinhoff, right? Yeah. Steinhoff was just pure, unadulterated greed.
Do you know what I mean? And it also comes down to we are a social animal as human beings. So if the perception is that everyone is doing it, then it just becomes the norm. In fact, you start feeling like, oh, I'm the idiot. Why am I not part of this?
Yeah.
I'm the one following the rules. And
why am I doing that?
Do you know what I mean?
Every time I mention, so I need to soon go for my driver's test.
Mm.
And every time I say I'm really looking for a testing station that's not corrupt, people laugh because I don't want to pay a bribe. If I pass, I want to pass legitimately. If I fail, and that's fine, and I'll go do it again.
Yeah.
But every time I mention this, someone laughs and they go, no, just, and I think it's like 3,000 or 4,000, I don't know how much it is, but someone's like, no,
so
just,
you've been told.
Just prepare the money. And I'm like, no, I refuse to pay the money. I want to do this thing, fail or pass, and that be that. But I mean, that's just one example where you expect that, or if you try and do the right thing, people are like, don't be crazy. Don't be ridiculous.
We have these, and like I say, you get the seven, you think, white collar crime? Who's doing white collar crime? But we have everyday examples, just like you're saying now at the transport department.
Mm.
We have a huge problem of drinking and driving in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Huge problem. We know we do campaigns every year to be like, please, let's stop drinking and driving. But we know it's a running joke that actually I will drink and drive, because if I get stopped, as long as I have a 200 rand note, I'm probably going to go home. So you ask, how do we resolve this? I mean, really, that is the philosophical question, because it just talks about, we have to question what the morality of our society and what we deem as normal. Because we've gotten to this point by being number one on this list because it has become a normality in our society.
It will happen in the public sector. It will happen in the private sector. It will happen at your school.
Yeah, you must grease the wheel. It's almost as if, you know, if you apply for something and things, processes are followed, and you're like, do you mean I don't have to bribe someone? You know, that seems abnormal.
Mm.
I don't have to bribe someone. I don't have to pay a facilitation fee for this thing to happen. Mm. And that's the problem. And, you know, I really don't have an answer for that, as smart as I think I am. But
so the question is then, and I mean, there must be some kind of breakthrough, right? Or some kind of, we must be winning somewhere, in some way. I mean, Ibrahim Patel, the Minister of Economic Development, I'm not sure that that's still his portfolio, I need to check. He spent quite a lot of time working on the getting, you know, directors, delinquent directors who are involved in white-collar crime, making it so that they could be criminally charged, because that was one of the other things, was you could be a delinquent director, act unethically in a criminal manner, and there wouldn't be any legal consequences. Now they are. Does that give us a little bit more? I mean, we haven't used them all yet, but is that a useful tool to have? I mean, you have the Competition Commission, who I think are doing fantastic work. Are they a useful tool? We speak about the Twin Peaks regulation system. Is that useful? Because there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Is any of it, if we use it right, is it useful?
I think it comes down to that, if we actually use it. Because again, like we say, we don't have a problem of, we lack the legislation, or we lack the processes, or we don't have the bodies. It's about them actually doing it. You know, we talk about another recent tragedy. Sorry, the name escapes me now, with the people that passed away from the mental, with the mental health.
Lafisitimeni.
You know, people have passed away there. People died. That's the reality of it. Is anyone going to jail for that? Do you know what I mean? That's not a, we paid 200,000 rand and we say sorry. People died. And that's the thing. And that as a society, when you see something like that, when you say over 150 people died and we had this whole, arbitration process, and the people were fingered, that is the person who made this decision.
This is the person that signed
this
it off.
This is the person who signed it off.
This is the person that stole the Sasol grant once people had died.
So you almost get apathy. You're almost like, actually, if I am at work and I see something like this happening, and at work there is a toll-free line that I could call and report this, but you just say,
What's the point?
Why? What is the point? What's going to happen after that? And that is the fundamental problem that faces us now, is that this is not a issue of we don't have the tools to address this or the means, but really it's a bigger question of, as a nation, we need to really question our morality and what we think about ourselves.
That's tough. That's actually quite tough.
It is tough.
I mean, the legislation and law enforcement is actually the easy bit, almost.
Almost, and the prosecution has to start.
The more difficult thing is, you know, what are we willing to accept? Because we know this thing has now seeped into everything.
And you see it every day. I mean, I drive quite a lot every week going to client meetings. And either 80% of people in Joburg have bought their licenses, or they just have no regard for the law, because the things you see out there, you just like, wow, seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, a great example is right here, Greyston off ramp. This morning there was a horrible accident. A taxi crashed into a truck or something like that, but people passed away. But you go any day on Greyston off ramp, there's supposed to be two lanes on the right where you can turn towards Sandton, and then the two lanes on the left, you sort of going straight or towards Alex. But every morning on that off ramp, all four lanes are turning right. Now you look at that and you say, you need to get to work, until someone dies, like this morning. And then we ask ourselves, how did this happen?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How did this? Of course. What were you expecting? And then we can't be surprised about the survey, because we have every month, every week, examples of this happening. But because it's not, like I said, something violent in your face that really sticks with you, like those stories you hear, someone broke into the house, killed the whole family. We just dismiss it. And part of it is we've just gotten to the point where we just like,
it happens.
Tough.
It's a tough conversation. Always a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you for coming in. That's Mduduzi Luthuli, co-founder and executive director at Luthuli Capital.